it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
Hey, 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 all right. Welcome back, everybody. Time for Toker Talk Radio. You can toke, you can talk, et cetera, et cetera. Glad to have you here. Hey, quick note as to Willie Nelson got a Christmas sweater. Did you see the picture? Came across the Stoner news feeds. The Willie Nelson got a Christmas sweater from Snoop Dogg. And it says smoke weed every day. This is very cute. So I thought that was a nice little gift there. It's the new year. We're glad to have y'all here at the Russ Belville Show. And we got a lot of big surprises coming up in this forthcoming year. And a couple of quick notes. I posted up on weednews.co the dozen quick facts. And I got fact checked. I messed up a fact. I had said that statewide medical marijuana has gone 14 for 17 in elections. It's actually 14 for 18. 14 for 18. I'd forgotten about Florida because Florida lost in 2014. I didn't pick it up in my filter because I was filtering for stuff that was 50% or less as a loss, right? It's like, oh, well, yeah, Florida lost because it's less than 60%. That's what you need in Florida. So I've made the adjustment. If you downloaded the graphic from the Weed News site, there's a new graphic up in its place with the correct data. We always want to make sure the data is correct. And there'll be plenty of data to access at the newradicalrust.com. I've been working on that. We should have that up in a couple of weeks for you to take a look at. I've been collecting data on a bunch of these different spreadsheets for years now, and I'm ready to get it released to the general public. You can make all sorts of great drug war data mining arguments from this stuff. I've got every poll on marijuana legalization nationwide since 1969. I've got all 50 states and 5 U.S. territories as far as their marijuana laws and their population and how much they smoke per month and how much the kids are smoking and how dangerous they think it is, and statistics on alcohol and other drugs as well. And it can help you make your arguments. I think there's going to be 5 data sets. We'll have the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, the Monitoring of the Future set. We'll have drug abuse, treatment episode data set, the TEDS, the information on drug rehabs. We'll have the FARS encyclopedia, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, on fatal crashes and all of that. Plus, I have some state level data that I'll be putting up from Washington, Colorado, and Oregon for their traffic and crime and other measures since legalization has taken place. But all of this takes money. This all takes money, and it's the new year, and it's time for me to start generating some more sponsorships and donations. So you're going to be hearing from me begging for cash from time to time. This is going to be one of those times. It's not my favorite thing to do. It's not your favorite thing to hear. But we need to refill the coffers. So if you can help out, you can send donations via PayPal. It's russ@radicalrus.com for PayPal. russ@radicalrus.com. And the more you send, the more I get. That's the way it works. And I tell you, when I get it, I buy cameras and laptops and baggage and Uber fees and plane tickets and train tickets and SD cards and all the stuff I need to keep bringing you all these articles and all these audio recordings and videos and pictures and stories from the world of marijuana. I want to keep doing it. Help me do it.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Legal to listen to all over the world. We're just not sure about France. CannabisRadio.com.
CannabisRadio.com proudly presents the newest and greatest podcast in the galaxy, The Real Dirt with Chip Baker, your insider industry connection to accurate and entertaining information about cannabis technology, production, cultivation, and everything in between. Rolling joints and dropping knowledge about cannabis technology, production, cultivation, and everything in between. The future of legal cannabis has arrived, and we want to give you The Real Dirt with Chip Baker. Look for new episodes at CannabisRadio.com, TheRealDirt.com, or subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
Educator, author, and advocate Dr. Mitch Earlywine is here to tackle the burning issues.
And I'm here to clear up the myths about cannabis and burn them away with science.
CannabisRadio.com presents a no-holds-barred platform that seeks to redefine and revolutionize the entire scope of the cannabis culture while opening the door for more to join the cannabis crusade.
Dr. Kevin Hill.
You can't ignore the fact that, like alcohol, most people who use don't have a problem. So I think that you need to think about policy in that way while educating people properly about marijuana. I think that's the way to go.
Burning Issues, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belville Show is.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Pod 2.0. It's not your father's Woodstock weed. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Just about 9 after the hour. Just catching up on some of the chat room. Glad to see so many folks out there run around. And John Thomas, Reverend Richard. Tiaris, is that name? I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Tommy's out there. Kelly, Kathy. I need better glasses. Doc Herbalist, good to see you all. Thanks for joining us. And if you're listening and you don't know what the hell I'm talking about, we have a live chat room. If you're listening on the iHeartRadio or the Spreaker or the Cannabis Radio Player, there's this little balloon. Looks like a little cartoon balloon. If you click that, it'll open up the chat room. You can join the rest of the chatters, including Big Daddy Fink, who just signed in from the Atlanta area. No, South Carolina, South Kakalaki. Anyway, got another story I wanted to talk about a little bit here, and it has to do with an article that I was reading in LA Weekly about Marijuana Anonymous. And it's, you know, modeled on Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12-step program, and how Marijuana Anonymous helps combat cannabis dependency. Now, I'm not going to get into the argument about whether there is cannabis dependency, how serious it may be, whether these people really have it, because as far as I'm concerned, if they think they have it and they want to sit in a room with each other and talk about it, fine, great. That's your thing. How people, their relationship, you know, other people's relationship with cannabis, to me, is none of my business. I don't care, right? If you've got a problem with it and you need some help with that, I encourage you to get that help. Please do. My only issue with cannabis really is personal, is really that I have a relationship with it and I don't think I should be treated differently because of that. That's really what it comes down to. I shouldn't be arrested, ticketed, fined, jailed, discriminated against, rejected, shunned, treated differently, given second class service or participation, restricted from employment or housing or medical treatments or child custody or gun rights or anything else. My relationship with cannabis ought to be nobody's business. No big deal. So when it comes to this idea of cannabis dependency and Marijuana Anonymous and all of that, it doesn't affect me and I don't care about it until it starts getting used as a method to start infringing on my rights and treating me differently and making me a second class citizen again. And so what I wanted to focus on here was this notion of cannabis dependency and how it's going to be used by our opponents and people who dislike us, cannabigots, how they're going to use this in the future as marijuana inevitably becomes more and more legal. And I wanted to hit upon one particular link that was in the story. And it had to do with studies on dependence, on drug use dependence. And so this study that they brought up came from 2010. And the study was entitled Probability and Predictors of Transition from First Use to Dependence on Nicotine, Alcohol, Cannabis, and Cocaine. Results of the National Epidemiological Survey on Alcohol and Related Conditions. So these researchers were basically trying to figure out what is the cumulative probability of developing dependence among nicotine, alcohol, cannabis, and cocaine users, and to try to predict the, you know, what effects lead from use to dependence. So they did this on 15,000, almost 16,000 smokers, almost 29,000 drinkers, 7,300 pot smokers, about 2,200 cocaine users. And they used analysis to figure out what's the cumulative probability of transitioning from use to dependence. What's the chance that using this drug is going to lead you to being dependent on the drug? Now, what they found was that the cumulative probability estimate of transition to dependence was 67.5% for nicotine users. Wow. So what they're saying is someone who smokes a cigarette 2 out of 3 times is going to end up being a smoker, going to be addicted to it, have dependence problem. 2 out of 3 of them that try it will move on to dependence. Cumulative probability. They found that it was 22.7% for alcohol users. More than 1 out of 5 people who try a drink of alcohol are going to end up dependent on it. They're going to have an alcohol problem. More than 1 out of 5. They found that the cumulative probability estimate for transition to dependence was 20.9% for cocaine users. 1 out of 5 people that tries cocaine going to have a dependence problem with it. About the same rate as the alcohol users. A little less. And for cannabis, the cumulative probably estimate of transition to dependence for cannabis users was 8.9%. Barely 1 out of 11. Now, another thing they discovered in this study was that the dependence came faster with cannabis and cocaine. That is, the median number of cases, half the cases that transitioned to dependence, the median was 27 years for smoking. The median for alcohol was 13 years. The median for cocaine was 5 years, and the median for cannabis was 4. So far fewer people are going to have a dependence problem with cannabis, but they're going to find out quicker. It's going to take less time for them to find that out. And what this study tells us here, what I want to get out of this study here, is that this idea of cannabis dependence being used as a cudgel to beat back marijuana legalization, oh my God, people become dependent on it, once again suffers from that selective bias of not looking at the other drugs, the legal ones, where 1 out of 5 are going to get addicted to alcohol and 2 out of 3 are going to get addicted to nicotine. So do we require the same sorts of requirements for nicotine? Imagine, if you will, that we took the rules for marijuana packaging and we applied them to cigarettes. Imagine no more just pull the little piece of plastic, strip off of the little cellophane off of the cigarette pack to get your smokes. Imagine that instead it comes in a childproof sealed container. Opaque. Childproof sealed container with no colors, no cartoon characters, and no, flashy graphics. Right? Just like, just like we do with cannabis, right? Opaque sealed containers, childproof for your cigarettes. Imagine proposing that. Imagine proposing the advertising restrictions on alcohol that are being proposed for cannabis. Your bar can't have a sign any bigger than 1,600 square inches. Can only be black letters on white font of a certain point size. You can't have any giveaways. You can't have any two-for-ones. You can't have any specials. Imagine. But these substances that have a 2 out of 3 dependence risk and a 1 out of 5 dependence risk, we do very little to curb the 1 out of 5 one. We've done better with the tobacco one. There's a lot more restrictions on tobacco advertising and tobacco promotion than there used to be. But nowhere near what we're trying to build for cannabis that only has a dependence issue with 1 out of 9. And then let's consider what is the effect of that dependence on our society. 2 out of 3 tobacco smokers moving on to a dependence leads to those 2 out of 3 people having more lung cancer, having more emphysema, having more health issues, costing our healthcare system more, reducing our productivity, not just from their illnesses and absenteeism, but also from the damn cigarette breaks they got to take every hour or two. The alcohol, the 1 out of 5 that are getting addicted to alcohol, we know that those alcohol addicts are the ones that are driving drunk and hitting people and killing people and developing cirrhosis, and the ones that are, the ones that assault their spouse or their domestic partner, that commit the crimes while they're drunk. We know that's happening. But what is the significant societal impact of the 1 out of 11 who develop the dreaded cannabis dependence? What, more noodly guitar solos? Really, really awesome pastries? Great art? What is it? What's the problem we're trying to protect ourselves from by not having the billboards and putting the stuff in the childproof opaque containers and reducing the advertising and limiting the 1 ounce purchases and the home grows have to be completely locked up? What is the big societal fear? Well, it's that people will grow that pot and sell it on the black market to places where it's illegal. Really, it's so odd that so much of what is wrong with how we're legalizing isn't the fault of legalizing, it's the fault of us having to deal with other places that still maintain prohibition.
Boot to the head.
Ow, you bullied me in the head!
Yeah, you had it coming. Happy 420, everyone, from one of America's two legal time zones, with the exception of the Pacific time zone in Idaho. But it's great to be legal. I'm going to celebrate with this nice, well-rolled cone. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about the dependency on cannabis. Oh, no!
Being green is good. Growing green is good. Making green is great. CannabisRadio.com.
Equio, New Frontier's cutting-edge big data platform, puts the information and answers you need right at your fingertips in real time to help you more effectively run your cannabis business. Go to www.equio.io to sign up for your free membership today. Again, that's www.equio.io. Run with New Frontier and let us help you conquer the wild.
NARMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Supreme Court is wrong on the Second Amendment.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Hope you had a great safety meeting. I'm feeling pretty safe here myself. We were talking before the break about the dreaded cannabis dependency. I feel like when it comes to someone's relationship with cannabis, the only person that can determine whether or not they've got a problem with it is the person who's got a problem with it. And there is a psychological or psychiatric designation for a substance use disorder, SUD. The DSM-5 has got a list of, like, I think it's 11 different things that you ask someone. And if someone's answering yes to a couple of them or more, that's supposed to be indicative of a substance use disorder. And there's things in it like, you know, tried many, many times to stop and was unsuccessful in stopping. And spend a lot of time trying to acquire the product. And, you know, strange thoughts and all sorts of weird things in there. And the problem with it is that, for one, in the context of cannabis being illegal in most places, that kind of confounds the diagnosis a little bit. You might have strange thoughts. You might be a little paranoid because they really are out to get you, right? That could be problematic. And, you know, spending a lot of time trying to get the substance, well, yeah, it's illegal. You can't just walk to a store and get it, right? And then it's also confounded by the fact that cannabis isn't like a lot of other drugs in that it's not always a drug of abuse. It's got so many medical benefits to it. So when someone says, well, you know, I just couldn't stop smoking marijuana because, yeah, once I tried to quit, I had this terrible insomnia. Well, maybe it's cannabis that is your medicine for insomnia, and stopping taking your medicine is having your symptoms come back. what I'm trying to get at here is when they talk about what are the problems people suffer, how do you tell that you've got a dependency? Could just be you stop taking medicine and now the things that you suffer from are coming back. You know, that you're no longer treating the problems you had. See, it's always a sore spot with me because I come from this background where my dad was addicted to alcohol, addicted to speed, and went into counseling, got into recovery, got his degree as a social worker with a emphasis on drug and alcohol counseling, and then went back and became a drug and alcohol counselor for a decade or so. He was treating people. And he had to treat people with real dependency issues, heavy-duty drinkers and meth addicts and, you know, all sorts of heroin, terrible things, right? And so it always bothers me putting the marijuana dependent in that same discussion. It reminds me of the scene from Half-Baked, right? So it reminds me of how, you know, we put pot smokers in the same jail cells with murderers, right? It's just disproportionate. It does not fit. Now, it's not to say that some people don't have a problem with marijuana and do need to stop smoking it and can't. I'm not going to say that doesn't exist. But again, that's up to the person to decide. I don't think there's any one-size-fits-all thing that's gonna work for this. There's not going to be any real easy checklist to try to determine if someone's suffering from substance use disorder. For example, I smoke marijuana. Did you catch that? You might have noticed over the years. I smoke marijuana not just every day, but multiple times every day throughout the day. Like, I get up in the morning, I sit down at the laptop, I start going through the news, and I smoke a joint. Around lunchtime, might take a dab. During the show, smoke another joint. After the show, take another dab. Have some dinner, maybe have a dab before going to bed. Rinse and repeat. Same every day. So, do I have a dependence on marijuana? I don't think so. I put out more writing output than most of my colleagues that I could think of. I've done now, this is show number 881 that I've produced and written and put together. And that's on top of another 908 shows I did before that with Normal. All on my own, right? Writing, booking, producing, recording, editing, posting. I do it all. And the travel booking and the travel and the hotels and the interviews and the logistics and all that, too. It's all me. Am I dependent? If I had to go without weed, would it be a big issue in my life? Probably. I remember before I smoked a lot of weed, I used to be kind of insomniac. I used to be more anxious. And people are like, my God, you're so hyper. I can't imagine what you'd be like without weed. Yeah, you don't want to imagine it. It's not pretty. So that's why I think there's no real one size fits all that works for this. And my relationship with cannabis is just fine, thank you. But this is where it starts to clash with the public policy people. Because the way the public policy people think of it is that marijuana smoking itself per se is a bad thing. It's something that ought to be reduced, eliminated if possible, but we know we can't eliminate it, so we'll reduce it as much as possible. Because smoking of marijuana is bad, and smoking more of it, therefore, must be worse. That's kind of like the default mindset I see a lot of these public policy people coming at us with. It comes in these proposals of, well, we need to make sure that the price doesn't get too low. Why? Well, because then people would smoke marijuana and it'd be easier. You know, kids would smoke it more too. Yeah, but I smoke more too. I smoke a lot. I'm not going to smoke anymore. I really think I'm smoking as much as I can smoke. And all you're doing by keeping the price high is making me have to spend more money on it.
This is a hypothetical conversation where I actually have to spend money on weed. I don't spend money on weed. I know too many growers.
But anyway, I'm one of the lucky ones. Hypothetically, if I had to spend money on weed, all you're doing by keeping the price high is artificially restricting people's choice to use as much weed as they'd like. And for some of us, that's a bad thing. For the medical patients out there, it's certainly a bad thing, artificially making the price high. And for people like me who just, it's just a part of our life. We just, it's like coffee to us. It's like just a daily thing. You're infringing on our rights to try to dissuade somebody from taking the wrong path or becoming addicted to something that, again, the studies show is the one least likely to get addicted to. We could handle, at least it would be a little more understandable if all of these restrictions and this mindset was applied to everything else that's far more harmful than marijuana. But for it to consistently be applied against this brand new marijuana thing, which has been around for 7,000 years, but to be consistently applied to our choice and not applied to everyone else's choices that are so more harmful to themselves and to the rest of society just gets old. It just is so frustrating. We just want equal treatment. And it's hard to accept not getting that equal treatment. It's hard to accept it when you turn on the television and it's bad enough that there's the beer ads, right? And, you know, the Coors Light and all that, and the, you know, the bikini models with the cheeseburgers, all the stuff that I've been mentioning. But that's advertising, right? You can expect, you know, advertising. They're trying to sell something. They're going to use sex. They're going to make it seem glamorous and young and hip and chic. And you can expect that, right? That's already bad enough. But then you'll turn on shows like Today, the Today Show, like hour four of the Today Show with Hoda and Kathy Lee. Are they still doing that? I haven't watched Today in a while, but are they still doing that thing where they've all got like a full glass of wine at 9 a.m. and they're having the Wine Wednesday or whatever the hell they call it? Are they still doing that? They're not selling wine, at least as far as I understand it. They're just taking drugs on television because it's enjoyable for adults to do. Nobody thinks of it that way. Nobody thinks of the, oh my God, Kathy Gifford's taking drugs on TV. That's what alcohol is. And I'm fine with it. I think it's, you know, can be entertaining as hell. I like the old clips of the 60s when the Rat Pack, you know, Dean Martin and, you know, Sammy Davis Jr. and all those guys were, Peter Lawford, they were drinking on stage. They had a bar, they literally had a bar on stage at the Sands during their sets with an orchestra behind the bar, right? And the bartender right there on the stage while Dean singing or Frank Sinatra's singing. they go over and grab another highball and drink it down. I got no problem with that. That's adult stuff. I'm all for it. It's just, why do we not get that for us? Why are we still demonizing marijuana as if it's this terrible, terrible thing? And not terrible from the not even necessarily terrible from the perspective of what it might do to you. I think a lot of people are past that reefer madness. But still a thing bad people do, a dirty thing, a forbidden thing, a not honorable thing, a dishonorable thing. That's what I'm sick of. I'm sick of having to deal with that stigma. That we somehow need to be ashamed. We somehow need to hide. We somehow can't let the kids know that adults smoke pot. And yet the kids are quite cognizant that we do and are well aware of the drinking and the cigar smoking and the pharmaceuticals and the couple in the bathtub with the erectile dysfunction drugs. They're quite well aware of them. Why do we need to stay hidden? I think it's time for us to not be hidden. It's time for us to be open and proud and understand that legalization isn't just, oh, we're sick of locking potheads up. It's we deserve equal rights. We want the same rights, responsibilities, and respect as our beer drinking friends. It's not too much to ask. Fairness, equality, an end to separate but equal. I think that's as American as it gets, huh? All right, stay tuned, folks. We're going to take a commercial break, and we'll be back with more here on the Russ Belville Show, live from Portland, Oregon.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Cannabis use isn't the only thing growing. So are we. Grow with us. CannabisRadio.com.
Cannabis legalization efforts are increasing competition for businesses wanting to make it big. In this complex and fast-changing environment, only the savviest will survive. What are you going to do to stay ahead of the game? Enter New Frontier's free platform, Equio, the premier business intelligence, visualization, and marketing platform for the cannabis industry. With Equio, you can stay on top of your store sales, trends, and competition, better understand your seasonality and broader sales trends, identify and compare your top products and categories, and cross-buying opportunities. Go to www.equio.io to sign up for your free membership today. That's EQUIO.io to sign up now. The power of real-time big data is now in your hands. Run with New Frontier and let us help you conquer the wild.
Educator, author, and advocate Dr. Mitch Earlywine is here to tackle the burning issues.
Author Catherine Hiller and her great new book, Just Say Yes, Marijuana Memoir. So I love the way you use time in the memoir.
I started at the present time and I described a visit to my dealer. And then I would go backward in time so that every chapter starts a little bit earlier. I do not feel that marijuana has in any way harmed my life. It certainly hasn't led me to the streets. It's led me to a more joyful life experience.
Burning Issues, only on CannabisRadio.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show, annoying Kevin Sabat since 2012.
The International Cannabis Business Conference comes to San Francisco, California on February 16th and 17th, 2017. The ICBC San Francisco, Northern California's first business-to-business event since the recent historic election, will bring together top state regulators and industry leaders to discuss permits, business models, and opportunities within the newly enacted laws and landscape. Of course, the ICBC also famously offers some of the best cannabis industry networking, leveraging our worldwide following to connect wholesalers, brands, distributors, investors, and strategic partners. And don't forget to come early for our VIP reception and stay late for our legendary after party. Join us for the longest continuously running cannabis business conference in California at the Hilton San Francisco Union Square, the one and only International Cannabis Business Conference. Visit internationalcbc.com for tickets today.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 39 after the hour, and I'm really excited about the Inauguration Day protest. Adam Eidinger and the cats with DCMJ, the DC Cannabis Coalition, are going to be handing out 4,200 joints at Donald Trump's inauguration, and they're instructing folks at 4 minutes and 20 seconds into Donald Trump's inauguration speech to light them up. And wow, this will be, I think, our first big test to see what's going to happen here with weed under a Trump administration, because it's an interesting situation in Washington, D.C. Of course, Initiative 71 legalized the personal possession of up to 2 ounces of marijuana in Washington, D.C. and home cultivation. But Congress has blocked any sort of marijuana market. So there's no shops, there's no commercial grows or anything. However, people can gift marijuana to one another. They can give it to each other freely. So I was there in May when DCMJ had a protest outside the White House, and they had set it up where they brought out a big old wagon, and it had a PA system kind of thing on it. And we were just right out there in front of Lafayette Park and handing out joints and seedlings to people. Let's see, about 100, 200 people out there. And people were lighting up. And the Secret Service was right there. I mean, you could see them plain as day just looking at us. And the Washington, D.C. police, and nobody's doing anything about it. Now, in Washington, D.C., though, you have to remember that not everything in Washington, D.C. is Washington, D.C. A lot of stuff in Washington, D.C., is federal land. In fact, I think it's about 60% of the land in D.C. is federal. And we found this out in May. I mean, we didn't find it out, but it affected us in May when we were having that protest, because we were protesting initially on Pennsylvania Avenue. Pennsylvania Avenue is a road. It, therefore, is part of Washington, D.C., the city. Now, Pennsylvania Avenue runs right in front of the White House there, right? So that's where we were protesting. And since we were on that road, that's D.C. property, and the joints we were holding were perfectly legal. But there was a disturbance that day, and the Secret Service wanted to close off Pennsylvania Avenue for safety's sake, move everyone back a block. Well, back a block was, I think, I Street or H Street. I can't remember which. And, or maybe it's K Street, whatever it is, but one of them letter streets. And again, that's a street, so it's Washington, D.C., so it's D.C. land. It's perfectly legal to have that joint. But in between Pennsylvania and that street was Lafayette Park. And Lafayette Park is federal. It's federal land. So all the folks that had weed on them and plants and all that stuff were legal on the street. And then if they walked into the park, they were federally illegal and could be arrested. And then once they got back out to the street, they'd be legal again. That's how weird it is. In fact, a lot of people walked all the way around to get to the next cross street and come back up just so they would be legal the whole time rather than making the cut across the park. So how much of the inauguration is going to be visible from places that are DC land and not federal land? I haven't mapped it out. I'm going to do that later on tonight, trying to figure that out for an article, but I want to make a map for people. If you're going to smoke weed at the Trump protest or Trump inauguration, here's where you need to do it so that you're legal. And we'll see how that works out. You know, some people disdain smoke-ins. You know, some people have the attitude of how, you know, we're trying to put our best foot forward and we're trying to present ourselves as responsible cannabis consumers. So having smoke-ins is counterproductive because it shows us as being, you know, rebels that break the law and don't care about the public and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I see that point, but I think a bigger point is made through civil disobedience by disturbing people, by getting them out of their comfort zone and forcing them to confront the reality of the situation, right? To confront the idea that, okay, I'm breaking a law right in your face. And if you really think it's a terrible, terrible thing, then you must do something about it. And when they don't, well, then that proves the point. Or if they do, that helps convince other people that what they're doing is wrong. Now, it's the basis of how Martin Luther King, Gandhi, all sorts of people made a point, was civil disobedience. That tension that's necessary to sometimes make your point and to get people to understand.
You know, I read sometimes people getting upset, like here in Portland, people get upset when there's like a Black Lives Matter protest or a Trump protest and they walk out onto the freeway. They walk out onto I-5 and they block the traffic on I-5, or they walk into the Max Line tracks, you know, our light rail train, and block that and block the commuters that are trying to get home. And I read people complain, oh, I was on your side until you did that. And oh, you blocked the traffic and you made my life suck. And man, they get all upset, right? But I think they missed the point of the tension, the point of the civil disobedience, which is if you think you're inconvenienced just trying to drive somewhere on the freeway because there's a bunch of protesters in the road, imagine being a black guy trying to drive anywhere and getting pulled over on a weekly basis and how much that's an annoyance to his life. Imagine, you know, the point being, I don't want to try to make up more examples. The point being, though, that if you're inconvenienced by the traffic problem, by the protest, imagine how much more inconvenient what they're protesting about is. And I think people miss that sometimes. So I support this. I think the DCMJ thing is a great idea. Smoke out the Trump administration. Let's do it. Of course, maybe some will say, ah, see, there's the backlash. That's what Jeff Sessions will jump right on. See, they smoked weed right out there in front of the inauguration. I don't know. I think it's worth doing. I say keep pushing the boundaries. We're just going to have to, it's going to be an interesting next 4 years. And I think the tactics we're going to have to employ are going to have to be a little less nice guy, a little less, oh, we'll find a way that we can possibly work with it. We might be able to work with them and might be able. Now, I think this is going to be a brawl. I think that, well, I've been writing about it for a while now. I think that the team that Trump is putting together in his administration does not bode well for it being friendly toward the marijuana industry. Let's put it that way. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Donald Trump has lined up, you know, maybe Donald Trump, Coach Trump here has, you know, drafted running back after running back after running back. But when he puts them on the field, it'll all be for passing game, right? Maybe. But no, I think when the coach keeps drafting running back and offensive lineman, he's trying to produce a team that'll produce a running game, right? If Trump is putting Sessions and Price and all these anti-marijuana people into, you know, positions of power, that tells me what that says more to me than what he says. His actions say more to me than what he says. I don't believe a damn thing Donald Trump says. I don't think Trump believes half the things Donald Trump says. And I know there's all these people out there in, you know, I may be in the minority amongst the cannabis commentators right now. I read a lot of cannabis commentators that are, you know, saying, they would be unwise to pick a fight with marijuana. It's too big. There's too much money. All these states are making the money and all the jobs that are being created. It's a new industry and Trump's a money guy. He'll see the money coming and he'll know that there's money involved and he'll want nothing but money. I don't think so. I think that there's still, for many people, a moral issue to this that outweighs the money issue. And I think for Trump, there's not enough money in play for him because he's not a weed smoker. He's not even a drinker. He's a teetotaler. People forget that. There's nothing in play for Trump here. And there's something in play against Trump's friends in some of these other industries. He just put an oil industry guy as the Secretary of State, CEO of Exxon. You know, Exxon, those pro-cannabis people, right? Right? So who's going to be getting the attention of a Donald Trump? The cannabis industry with its, ooh, we've got a whole $6 billion. Ooh, $6 billion. Ooh. What was ExxonMobil's profits last year? Let's consult the Google here. ExxonMobil profits. See how our $6 billion. Now remember that $6 billion industry that we're talking about is the entire, you know, industry, the total industry nationwide. ExxonMobil had a net income of $2.65 billion in the third quarter. So for the year they're going to be about the same as the marijuana industry, the whole marijuana industry. This one oil company, ExxonMobil,
made as much profit. Remember, this is net income, not gross. Made as much profit as the entire gross of the marijuana industry. So who's going to get Trump's ear? His Secretary of State, the CEO of Exxon, that makes as much profit as the entire marijuana industry does in a year, makes as much profit as the value of the entire marijuana industry, or the marijuana industry that's mostly concentrated in blue California, blue Oregon, blue Washington, blue Nevada, blue Colorado, blue Massachusetts, blue except for one electoral vote, Maine, and three electoral votes in Alaska, where there is no real cannabis money. See, that's the way I think about this, right? Trump's got nothing to lose by pissing off California, Oregon, Nevada, Washington, Maine, Massachusetts, and Colorado. It's not going to cost him any re-elections or anything. He'll be just fine. But him going against and promoting and allowing a marijuana industry to develop could piss off a Kansas or Nebraska. I mean, he's not going to lose those states either, but maybe some of them Rust Belt states that he needs to keep a hold of. Who knows? Again, it's all speculation at this point. I could not be hoping more that I am wrong, that I am wrong about what's going to happen under Trump. I hope I'm so wrong. I hope that in a year from now, people are laughing at me. God, Russ, you thought it was going to be the worst thing ever. And look what happened. Look at all the jobs. Look at all the money. Can you believe that Trump and Sessions gave us the go-ahead? Can you believe they even made the Cole memo better than it was? Wow, who would have thought? I just don't think so. Just read what the folks out at Project Sam are already asking for. They're saying at a minimum, the federal government ought to enforce the Cole memo to the letter. And what they mean by that is doing federal surveys on all of the things that the Cole memo says the state shouldn't do. And if they violate any one of them, shut down their industry or sanction it heavily. All right, we'll be back in just a moment to wrap things up on this Wednesday. Thanks for listening.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
We don't limit how much you smoke, and we don't limit where you listen. Cannabis Radio is now on iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
Cash?
Sorry.
I don't carry around cash, and I don't want to use the ATM and pay surcharges.
You don't need to carry cash. Haven't you heard about PayQuick?
Okay, tell me about PayQuick.
It's the safe and easy way to pay. It works just like your debit card to securely pay for your purchase, and it gives you rewards points every time you use it.
Nice.
PayQuick, the safe and easy way to pay. PayQwick.com.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's TheSilverTour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at HempInc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
Get the latest updates on the Russ Belville Show by following Radical Russ on Twitter and liking the Russ Belville Show on Facebook.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
And blue blasting gurgan, fuffin dur blasting schnurb norbin. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. And as we wind up that last segment, wanted to make a mention. I got a lot of inspiration from an article in Politico magazine. Jeff Sessions' Coming War on Legal Marijuana is written by Jim Higdon. If you recognize that name, he's the author of Cornbread Mafia. He was a guest on our Reformers Reader segment. And Higdon makes a really good point in here and talks about how the Rohrabacher Amendment twice passed the House in the most recently in 2015 as part of the omnibus spending package and signed into law. The Rohrabacher Amendment, of course, is the one that says the DOJ can't spend any money to prosecute in the medical marijuana states. And that's protected them from federal raids for the past couple of years. And this went through even up to the courts that said, no, it's, you know, absolutely legit. Can't go after the states. Here's the problem. If it's part of a spending bill, it has to be renewed every year. And so this Rohrabacher Fire Amendment, it's good until this April. And now there's new rules that have been implemented by Speaker of the House Paul Ryan. This is according to Higdon's article. Amendments related to guns, abortion, LGBT issues, and marijuana will no longer be permitted. A change that Kentucky Representative Thomas Massey, a sponsor of a bill to protect industrial hemp programs, considers an affront to regular order and a travesty to our democracy. So, no more purse-string amendments to protect veterans, to protect medical marijuana, to nothing like that. No more of this. You can't spend money to bust people will be possible through the House, where we've been making a lot of gains. Now, we could try to do that in the Senate, but it's 52-48 Republicans in the Senate at this point, and the chances of getting that through a committee are zero. So as of April, that protection that we've got for medical marijuana goes away. And like I said, the folks out at Project Sam, they've got some ideas as to what should happen. They're already saying that there should be a memo to the marijuana industry. This is, Sabet says, to the DOJ could write a letter to governors in legalized states stating that any state that issued licenses regulating marijuana sales is a violation of the Controlled Substances Act and say they have 90 days to revoke licenses. It could issue a new memo to the states that have not implemented marijuana sales yet and say that they advise those states not to allow them. DOJ could also say that in the next 6 months they will enforce the 2013 Cole memo and determine if states have violated its terms. It would be hard to argue that they haven't. Without any restraint from Congress and being egged on by the likes of Project Sam, the only thing that could stand in Attorney General Sessions' way of launching a new front in the marijuana wars is the president-elect. So, folks, you want to trust Trump? You think Trump's going to be keen on a big marijuana industry? I wouldn't make that bet. All right, folks, that's all the time we got for today. Time flies when you legalize. Thanks for joining us here and every weekday on CannabisRadio.com, where we are live from beautiful legal Potland, Oregon and Delta 9 Studios. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it.
you take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you scoop it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.